What's up, everybody? Welcome to another installment of the Roots, Rednecks, and Radicals podcast. On today's episode, we're going to learn something new and interesting in the world of Americana, roots, and folk music. But before we get to that, I want to say a quick reminder to give me a like and subscribe wherever you listen to this. And if you're on social media, give me a follow if you haven't already. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Just search up the name of the show and you'll find me there. All right, let's get to today's episode. Today's episode is a conversation with Melody Walker and Mercy Bell about their song, Jesus Was a Drag Queen. This song is about controversial subjects, about the stuff that's going on in Tennessee and around the country, anti-drag legislation, anti-trans legislation. And we had an amazing talk about all kinds of stuff. We talked about religion. We talked about Jesus. We talked about politics and all the stuff you're not supposed to talk about at the dinner table, right? Religion and politics. But it's great. We had a really interesting and deep dive into this song about the lyrics, where the song came from, and all that sort of stuff. And also just wanted to mention that this song is out on June 2nd. So this podcast is publishing this Friday, May 26th. June 2nd, the following Friday, is when it comes out. But you can pre-save it in Spotify. Just search it up and save it. And if you want to do that, what you got to do is go to Melody Walker's website and you'll find a link there, and you click on that link and then it'll pre-save it in Spotify. And that way, when it comes out, it's waiting for you and you can listen to it and it'll be there for you. One last thing before we get to the interview, I want to say a quick shout out to my friend Charlie Marks for letting me use their music on my podcast. And if you haven't heard Charlie's music, go check out their music on Spotify. Also look up the interview I did with them about their most recent album that came out a couple weeks ago. All right, let's get to this conversation. All right. So first off, I'm interested in why you wrote the song. There's obviously this national discussion happening around trans people and drag shows. But what was it specifically that prompted the writing of this song?
Well, Melody had the initial hook and was like, hey, I have an idea for a song. You want to hear it? And as soon as I heard Jesus Was a Drag Queen, I was like, yes, absolutely.
I'm in.
Right. We had a co-write scheduled. It was actually Mercy and I's very first co-write we ever tried to do. And sometimes that first one's just magic, you know what I'm saying? But we had been talking about doing a song about Weimar era Berlin and the gay scene in Berlin before the Nazis came and squashed it. And that was like a really daunting song. And we realized we had a lot more historical research to do, and it was kind of intense. And I was like, well, I have this like kind of stupid idea. You want to hear it? And so she heard that, and we decided to do that because it was a fun song.
Yeah. I mean, it started out fun, but then we were both very quickly like, oh, this has like, it actually is like, it had a gravitas to it that wasn't just kind of like a goofy, you know, satirical thing. It wasn't just that. It was, to me, it had a gravitas that old folk protest songs had and still do. And I like, we kept saying WWBDD, what would Bob Dylan do?
Well, because we were like, is this too many verses?
And
we're
yeah.
like, no, have the audacity of Bob Dylan. We did cut two verses. I think we had a couple more extra ones because you could just go with Jesus was a this, Jesus was a that, you know,
yeah,
and just keep going.
But
and
then
we went
I think
with
that's
the strongest.
I think it's helpful that we both played it out in Nashville. There's like a big, like, if you're a songwriter, we have writers rounds. So you get to play them out and gauge the audience participation and reaction. And I think that we were even editing it up to the first night that we started to play it, and like the audience loved it. So we were like, oh, okay, this is great.
Yeah, it was great. It's a little, but something that I did notice in our sing-alongs, like when we were trying to get people to sing it along, at least at my writer's round that I do every week, I think people were a little bit hesitant about the whores and queers, especially people who maybe don't identify or have
yeah.
ever had those things weaponized against them in any way. They don't necessarily feel that entitlement to reclaim those words. And so I think it's nice to have a modification for that line for people who just don't prefer to sing it that way. And I think it works, you know, because I want people have been talking about playing it in their churches, playing it for their kids and stuff.
Yeah.
And I want them to be able to do that. So I don't know. I think we might need to record the alternate version too.
Yeah, Mercy. We'll do the radio friendly version of like hip hop, where it's like just throwing expletives all over the place. But then, you know, it's a sick beat, so you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still figuring it out. So we recorded the song in the studio with a band, and it sounds great. But we might need to record from home, like an alternate version of the chorus lyrics, just to have that.
Yeah. And that's not too big of a deal to do. I mean, it's just a couple lines to record and then throw it in the mix. So that's good. Yeah. Well,
I mean, if Cardi B can do it with her number one hit, Wet and Gushy, then I'm pretty sure we can do it.
It's so much worse that way though.
Yeah.
That's all I can think about.
I guess Lizzo re-recorded a line after she released a song recently. She had the word spaz, I think, in it.
Yeah.
And she got some feedback, and she went back and redid it. And I was like, that's cool. You know, like, I appreciate that.
It's super cool. And she was just like, yeah, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I love it when people friction about it. It's like, you know, my bad. Yeah.
That's such a great example for people to see, because it doesn't have to be that deep. It can just be my bad. Okay. I'm going to try to do better. Can I fix it? Like right now, is that possible for me? Yeah. Oh, I can fix it. Great. Let's do it.
Cool. Yeah. Icon. She's an icon.
Yeah.
That's great. So I was wondering if you guys, either of you guys, had a connection to evangelicalism yourself. Did you grow up in a religious setting, or were you kind of outside of the church?
I didn't grow up evangelical. I grew up Catholic, which I didn't really know what evangelicalism was until I moved to the South. But if you've ever been around Catholicism, you might know there's a lot. Coming out was really hard. Because, you know, the Catholic Church still is waging war against queer people. But it's weird that the version of Christianity that I had latched onto as like a young queer person was kind of the radical side of it, which it's weird. They teach you about it, but then they'll teach you about like what this figure Jesus said, which is very different from the rules that get laid down on you, you know? So, you know, Jesus, whoever you want to see, whether he's the Messiah or a mythical creature or a historical figure, was pretty radical about love. But then, you know, when I came out of the closet and was like trying to reconcile my Catholicism, they're like, well, no, that you can't do that. So I'm like, but you know, Jesus probably wouldn't have cared, you know? So I'm not evangelical, but I did grow up Catholic, very Catholic.
What about you, Melody?
So my nuclear family growing up was not religious, which I'm really grateful for. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I like to say I was raised by wolves in California, because it feels that way living in the Bible Belt. Like, these people are like, what is wrong with her? Does she not have like the shame and the rules? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe
no.
I missed that memo. But I did grow up, my dad's parents were evangelical Christians, and they were part of like kind of like a charismatic church. And so I would go in the summer and do vacation Bible school and little music camp at their church, because it was partly like free babysitting and vacation for my parents to just be like, go hang out with your cousins at your grandparents' house. You know, they had a really nice house with a pool, and like it was a great time. I have great memories of hanging out with my cousins and going to VBS. And so I did get a heavy dose of all that though, and like you know, the stories and all that, you know. But other than that, would just go to church on like holidays with them.
Right.
And I was down for, you know, to do a musical, no matter whether it was a Bible musical or not. I was like, yeah, I was like, hook it up with those handbells. Hell yeah. Handbells are the shit. They're so fun.
They really
so
are.
So it's like, when else are you going to do a percussion ensemble, right? As a kid, like, it's like, you know, it's a lot of gear. So I got to play the handbells. Yeah, it was interesting being a part of that kind of culture, you know, and kind of all of my cousins were like, you know, pretty much atheists too. Like, nobody was a believer. So we would always, you know, we'd always be like During like prayers before meals and stuff, you know, at holidays and stuff, we'd all be like tickling each other's hands, you know, just like kind of like snickering. Like it's, I know it's awful, but like I really was raised by wolves. And so, but I did get to get some of that culture and the stories and the, you know, the deep cultural stuff of Christianity that's in our culture. And then I do feel like we're all just surrounded by it because of the fact that, you know, America is very Christian based. So, and in some ways more than the rest of the world, because we had these extremists who came over here to get away from persecution in their eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. From the Catholics, right?
The yeah. Puritans. No. Yeah. We can open up a whole other bag of worms with history.
Also the Anglican church though, right? They were like Anglican church. They were like, what, you want divorce? Like this is no part of nothing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Craziness. Yeah. I my wife and I are kind of a mixed bag. Love those two. My wife was raised Catholic, and then the both of us were evangelical until about 12 years ago. And we were kind of forced out for supporting gay marriage. And it was it was kind of traumatic, but like really awesome, to be honest with you, because I was actually going to become
it.
What's that?
Of describing it, like it's traumatic but awesome. It's liberating, yeah. But also traumatizing. Like I have a religious trauma therapist. So
you do, like,
yeah. Like he's I go to a trauma therapist, and one of his specialties is religious trauma, and he's queer. So it's like we don't talk about it in this country, but so many of us have experienced it. Yeah,
almost everyone that I meet here in Nashville has that background. Yeah. Like all the queer folks that I hang out with pretty much have a background of religious trauma.
Yeah. So like if you and your wife, like that is something I have heard from so many people, like you are not alone.
Yeah. No, it's wild. And so many people have left the church, and so many people were connected to it through youth groups in the 90s and early 2000s. There was this big movement of youth groups. And it's amazing how many people are former evangelical, ex-evangelical. You've even talked about it on TikTok a little bit, Melody, about these deconstructing Christian crowd. And it's kind of fascinating to watch. I'm all for it. I think evangelical Christianity has hurt so many people. It's just disturbing.
I like to say often, because I've always been really attached to like the mystical side of Catholicism and Christianity, which is very different from what's like the Catholic Church. I like to say I didn't leave the church left me. And that's really how I feel. Cause like I still, my aesthetic is still very much like the mystical, like I still have the saints around me, you know, like, there's a great word from the L word, the newest L word, the Generation Q, where they have a Latinx character and she's in church praying about something. And one of her like other friends comes in and is like, what the fuck are you doing in a church? And she's like, yo, I'm praying to the women because they get me. And I'm like, that's how I feel, especially as a Filipino American who grew up Catholic. It's like so much of it is not, there's so much of it that is like all loving and then all of a sudden and spiritual and like mystical and kind of badass. And then all of a sudden it gets taken away from you because like, oh, you like women. Like you're a woman who likes women and men. I like men and women, but so would suddenly it disqualifies me, you know? So I don't know. Writing this song was kind of like a fuck you. I know about Jesus. I actually know more about Jesus than our governor does. Cause I was a true believer until I was kicked out basically.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That's incredible. Yeah. The Catholic Church has so much of a mixed bag too. There's this whole social justice component to it. And then there's this whole crusty old white guy.
And they're completely at odds with one another. Like you have these like super like radical social justice-y Catholics who basically are just, I mean, they were, a lot of them were my heroes. Like Thomas Merton is a hero of mine, you know, Dorothy Day, who started the Christian socialists, you know, people don't even know the Christian socialists existed, but it's so radical. Like Christianity can be so radical, and it's been so, well, that's been pushed into the ground. So hopefully, like, that's when Melody was like, let's write the song. I was like, oh, you've touched on one of my niche interests, which is radical Christianity.
Oh, we have many, many niche interests, don't we? Yeah, liberation theology.
Yeah.
Liberation theology.
But what you're saying, Mercy, yeah, that about bringing Christian values to action for social justice, that's where it's at. And so that's what I'm kind of hoping we can do with this song. And I'm hoping we can kind of have it be a call to action and not just a balm for people, because it definitely is doing that. It's comforting people. Like, the comments on the video are crazy. They're just like people saying, this healed my religious trauma and stuff like that. People saying that they're crying while watching it. And I think that is great if it can be cathartic for people and make them feel okay and sort of get rid of, assuage some of the cognitive dissonance, or allow them to find a way to look at Christianity that is more positive. But it can't stop there. If it stops there, maybe we've done more harm than good. You know what I mean? Because Christianity is doing a lot of harm in the world today. And it's going to take Christians to like fix it from within. Mm-hmm. And I really hope people will want to do that work.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I thought the discussion around gender norms is really interesting. And in the first verse, you say they'd arrest him for dressing like a little girl. And I thought that was kind of a great kind of intro into the discussion. But yeah, I was wondering if you guys could speak to that verse a little bit, first off.
Well, the first verse is kind of the most irreverent one. You know, it's kind of a little bit of a joke, a little hypothetical of like, it literally came from a TikTok comment. Somebody had said, oh, well, what are they going to ban, like, productions of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat? And I was like, yeah, Jesus would look like a drag queen to them. And then that's where the song inspiration came from. And I'm not the first person to think of that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think I saw somebody sent me a cartoon that's Jesus getting arrested for being a drag queen. So I love that. Like, you know, it's in the ether. Like, it's kind of an obvious question that's vague, you know? Like, and what exactly constitutes drag?
And from a songwriting point of view, it's the hook you need. Like, right. I know we're not talking about theology right now, but from a songwriting point of view, as soon as Melody said it, I was like, oh, we're doing it. Like, that's that hook. Yeah. That's the hook.
So it kind of starts out a little silly, but then it gets dead serious. You know, the song dives into some hardcore scripture. We go into, you know, the trying to fit a camel through a needle's eye.
Yeah.
It's the same as a rich man trying to get into heaven. We go into Mary Magdalene. We go into, you know, Jesus being a radical in his time.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was, I went to Bible college. I was going to be a pastor at one point. And I have a bachelor's in Bible and ministry. And that was, Jesus is the one who radicalized me, like, to the left. Like, I was reading, I was in Bible college reading about Jesus, and I was also reading about Howard Zinn, People's History of the United States. And I was reading about some of those, like, Dorothy Day types, right? There's all these, like, union leaders who are, like, from the religious communities and stuff. And I was just like, what? There's this massive gulf between what, like,
yeah,
the Bible says and what you guys are talking about. And I would get in trouble all the time and ask questions. Hey, what
by
about
way,
this?
I love that. And can we get that on a bumper sticker? Jesus is who radicalized me to the left.
Yeah.
Because it is so, it's so real.
Yeah. It's wild. Like, how could you possibly not see this? It's right in front of your face, you know? And
yeah, the Bible to leftist pipeline. Love that.
Yeah.
It's just wild, you know, and it's so obvious. Absolutely. You know? So yeah, that verse is fantastic. I also like the verse about the trans kid, many in one. I just thought it was provocative and interesting. And side note, I was talking to my son. I was dropping him off at his grandparents just now about an hour ago. And I was telling him about this interview and the name of the song. And he goes, the first thing out of his mouth, he goes, oh, well, Jesus was trans. And I go, what do you mean, buddy? Oh. And he goes, well, he didn't have a Y chromosome.
That's right.
There you go. There you go.
I mean,
oh my God.
A couple people have said that on the TikTok, so it must be a meme that's going around that, yeah,
that's,
it's
great,
impossible for, yeah, Jesus to have a Y chromosome. But, you know, so the whole thing is the Immaculate Conception. It's the whole thing's miraculous, right? Mm. So I don't think that they would be swayed by that, but it is hilarious to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then the Holy Spirit is, you know, non-binary. God is non-binary. I back in my Bible college days, I got into an argument with a guy about whether God had a penis at one point, because they were all like, he was off on this whole thing about, there's a book called The Shack, and God is a woman, a black woman in The Shack. And the evangelicals freaked out about that in the early 2000s. And we were talking about it, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, God isn't man or woman. And I just asked him straight up, I'm like, do you think God has a penis? And he was like, stumped by that question.
Wow.
I'm like,
wow.
That's a
Dan McClellan actually agrees with us that God has to be more non-binary than gendered. I don't know if you check out Dan McClellan on TikTok.
No,
I haven't. He's a theology guy on there. Like, he's some kind of prof.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. He's very dry, and he just kind of fact checks people's theology. And so it was him responding to a video about someone saying that God can't be non-binary. And he's like, actually, listen, but so in that second verse, we really are getting into some much deeper liberation theology about looking at the idea of, if God isn't everything, you know, then isn't God every gender, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It's something sweet that my dad sent me a while ago, before this song. He just, apropos of nothing, just sent me, God has to be a they. Because my dad has four queer kids, so only two of them are heterosexual. So my dad is definitely an ally, but it was also like the nicest thing. They're so sweet. God has to be a they. So, and that was like months ago. So it was before this song happened, but it felt very like serendipitous also. But that's kind of going, it's like, I don't know, for all the people who are allies, it's definitely germinating.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And yeah, this is that bringing in the three in one, or many in one, I think is the line you guys use in the song, but I think you're referring to the Trinity kind of thing. And it's provocative, but it's not just trying to be shocking, you know, like there's a real, you know, solid thought behind it. And I think that's super cool. Well, another line that I really liked was, God is just another word for the underdog. And
So good. That's all melody. It was so good.
Yeah. Where did that one come
started from the, you know, what do you call it when a word's backwards? from just putting God backwards as dog. And I was like, underdog is so great. That's how my galaxy brain works. So that's how that line came about.
But your galaxy brain also like literally picked up on most of Jesus's teachings, which what you do for the least of these, you do for me. And so it's like, it was really good. It was definitely like, I was like, oh my God, you just like folk music-fied this scripture. It was awesome.
Totally. And, you know, so I did go to like VBS as a kid and church sometimes with my grandparents, but I probably got the most of the scripture, that's in my brain from somehow at my public school in the Bay Area in California, we did Godspell as a musical one year.
Hippies love that.
And and that's got a lot of that hippie Jesus stuff in it. Like, that's the whole thing. I mean, they had two hippie Jesus musicals in the 70s. Like
Superstar too, where Jesus is, if you think about it, Jesus could totally be bi in Jesus Christ Superstar. He's like torn between Judas and Mary Magdalene.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that's another tangent for a musical podcast. Yeah.
Totally. That's good. Yeah. I guess just that whole idea of Jesus identifying with the underdog seems to be so missed by the modern, you know, I like that phrase Christo-fascist movement, because that really describes what it is. It's this weird pairing of politics and religion and this kind of unholy alliance. And again, you read the words of Jesus and he's always there for the underdog. So I think that was a beautiful line.
Yep. The meek shall inherit, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Well,
he's pretty clear about that. He says it a lot of different ways, a lot of different times. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what they don't get about that, you know. And the least of these, you know, is what he says, what you did.
Pharisees and Sadducees, Fox News-esses.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe them for sure. I think most of the evangelical, I don't know about the Catholic world, but the theologically, evangelicals focus more on Paul and the writings of the letters, you know, Corinthians and all those letters that come after the stories about Jesus. Yeah. So I think that's where there's a lot big disconnect that happens because they're focused on that theology and not focusing on the words of Jesus.
That's so. Really fascinating.
I would love to go to Bible school. To like seminary just to learn all that stuff. It's really fascinating.
It's interesting because I, as a Catholic, we don't really read anything except for like the four gospels. Like you skirt over, you barely read the Old Testament. Maybe you read in Catholic mass, but you basically focus on the gospels. Maybe you'll read a letter or here or two there. But yeah, I mean, it's the old joke that Catholics don't read the Bible. It's pretty true. And so it's like, but we did read the gospels. So that, you know, I was indoctrinated with the Jesus stories, you know, but I wouldn't be able to tell you letters to here, or there, or anywhere from, I don't know those.
Right. For sure. Well, one other thing that you hit on was Mary Magdalene, and Jesus was a feminist, and the apostle of apostles, and I just loved how you brought her into the as well. And so I was kind of wondering again, you know, kind of where that one came from.
That was Mercy. That verse was like Mercy's fave.
As like a young queer kid, I always was taken by how Jesus never. Like it's in every story, like you think he's going to do one thing and then he does the other. So it's like, here's this woman, they're going to stone her to death. And he's like writing in the sand, doesn't even look at them. And he's like, you without sin cast the first stone. And it's such like a slap in the face to all these assholes who are just like, and then of course the first person that he, you know, if you believe in the resurrection story, the first person he speaks to is Mary Magdalene. Who, you know, in the mythos, like she was a prostitute, whether or not she was or not historically, I'm not up to date with what historians have discovered about Mary Magdalene, but you know, the fact that he would talk to her first before Peter or before any of his hiding disciples or whatever is like, he had such great regard for her, you know? And I follow, I don't know if you follow, the CAC, Center for Radical Grace. They're kind of Catholic, but kind of multi-unit, all spiritual, mystical out in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of meditations on Mary Magdalene. And I mm-hmm. found their meditations on Mary Magdalene to be so healing. And so like, you don't have to be Christian to get anything from it. You might have to like the desert a little bit, but she's just a very powerful figure to me, and especially in a time right now where there's so much like women's health and women's reproductive rights are so under attack. It's kind of like Jesus would be sitting there, you know, he wouldn't be attacking. You know, he'd be on, he'd be standing up for women. Yeah. So that's where I came from that.
Yeah, for sure. Is Richard Rohr, is that part of that?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Big fan of his. I love that guy.
Me too.
Yeah.
You guys are into some hip theology stuff. I got to get into
Yeah. Richard Rohr is like, you don't have to be Christian. You can, he kind of takes from mystical and theological traditions from all varieties of like practices. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty great. I would love to go do like a retreat out there and just like walk around the desert and drink mm-hmm. tea, but another day.
For sure. Absolutely. He's great. Yeah. And he brings a lot of Buddhist ideas into Christianity, which I appreciate.
Yep.
That's cool.
Well, there's, you know, some people think that Jesus went to India at some point in the missing years, you know.
That's for another musical.
Another musical. Or a John Prine song.
That does sound like a John Prine song. I'm surprised he never wrote that. I was wondering if you guys knew, when I was listening to the song, it brought up this other song from a rap group called Run the Jewels. There's a song called Walking in the Snow. Are you guys familiar with that?
Ooh, I have not heard it.
Okay, I know that band, but...
It's came out right before it came right at the beginning of 2020, right before the shutdown, right before George Floyd. But Walking in the Snow, the second verse, Killer Mike it's his verse. The whole verse is unbelievably good. It's a critique of policing and the school system and everything that Black people have to deal with in America. But there's a line where he says, "Never forget in the story of Jesus, the hero was killed by the state." And felt like that vibe was kind of in the song as well. And I thought that was kind of cool. Like I just felt the connection there between those songs.
For sure.
I'm going to have to listen.
I mean, that is literally what happened. It's pretty clear. It was the state that had a problem. Right. I mean, what do you guys think is the reason that Jesus got killed? We were talking about this when we were writing the song, but,
I mean, I feel
we were talking about what the charges were, like what was the charge, you know, and we had to kind of like look it up and we're thinking about that.
I think this one is hard because it's also very steep. There's a lot of like anti-Semitic stuff out there about it, too.
For sure.
So I think that you can definitely, I think you might know more about this since you were in Bible school, but for me, it's hard. I haven't really gone back and looked at it from a place of like history, like what was Pontius Pilate thinking, or like, you know, what did they really want, what was really happening, because the way you're taught it in church is a little anti-Semitic, or a lot of anti-Semitic, you know. So I wouldn't be the greatest to, I'm glad that we stayed away from kind of the way that they teach it in church, which is like the Jewish leaders had him put to death, you know. And so I was like, well, actually, you know, the Romans were the ones who got him up there. So, but I haven't done a deep dive in a long time about history. So maybe you know more about this.
Yeah. I guess I would just say from a kind of I kind of like the liberation perspective on most theology when I'm into it, which I'm not super into it. But I think it's just kind of a marriage of the Jewish leaders who he was causing a problem for by asking all these questions. They wanted him gone. And then the Romans didn't want some kind of uprising to happen. And so it was just kind of those things kind of fusing together, you know. He had the choice of, I think Barabbas was the other guy, and he had led a rebellion. I think he was kind of shocked that they picked Jesus, because he's like, well, we'd rather kill this guy because he actually led a rebellion. But whatever, you guys picked, so let's string him up.
And they chose Jesus, yeah.
I thought it was kind of that he was saying he was a type of king. It's like, he was like a king among men, you know, and it's like, okay, well, there's only one emperor, so you can't say that, or you need to go.
Challenging, you know, the power structure.
Well, as we know, in any kind of government structure, even if you dress in drag, you might get thrown in jail. So, you know, right. it's you never know what is going to piss off somebody in charge.
For sure.
We leave it open-ended in the song because we say, we end up saying, you know, he was a radical, preach against hate, enemy to no one except for the state, practice nonviolence, and maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Judas made a deal and he was crucified. So we kind of make it a, you know, maybe that's part of the reason why. Obviously,
it also wouldn't be the first like nonviolent group that would have splintered because some of the group members believed in more radical and violent methods of getting their point across. So, I mean, that's happened in history time and time again. So, who knows, you know?
Right.
Sure. And also the fact that you're nonviolent makes you a sitting duck, right? For the state. Yeah. Like you're not going to fight back, so they can kill you. That's kind of the trade off, you know? Yep.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think the song is absolutely astounding, and I think it's a brave move for you guys to do this, especially living in the South. And I just think it's
thank you.
It's cool, and so many people. I think it's going to really affect a lot of people. So, thank you for writing this song. It's incredible.
Yeah, thank you. It's been all love so far, but we'll see. I'm sure the backlash is coming too. So we're ready for it.
So before we go, when is the song coming out, and how can people find you guys online?
That's a great question. It is going to come out When we can get all our special guests on board, we're trying to get a few guest vocalists to come on and sing some verses on it. Okay. And have it be a collaboration track. But we're shooting for late April or early May.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Cool.
Yeah. And we also have a t-shirt that,
okay. It's coming out.
Yeah. It's going to be up for pre-order starting next week, but I think this is going to air closer to when the song comes out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to time it.
T-shirts will already be there.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we don't mention the t-shirt, cause I think the pre-sale might be closed by then, but anyway, it's going to be a benefit though. And any merch we do, or if we happen to get any money from the song, which doesn't usually happen, but if for some reason it were to get like a sync or something, and get used somewhere and get some money, we would, you know, make that a benefit too.
Cool. Cool. All right. Well, hey, thanks for connecting with me and talking about it. I thought we covered some good topics there. That was a fun conversation.
Sweet. It was. Well, awesome. Thanks for letting us derail it.
Yeah, yeah. That's fun.
It's the ADD thing. We're it's really good for songwriting. We're like,
it is. Oh, and wait, we should say how to find us. If you want to find me, oh, right. This person speaking, I'm Mercy Bell, like Mercy, Mercy Meat, and Taco Bell, Mercy Bell, on all the streaming, or mercybell.com, or on Instagram. Melody, how about you?
Is that really your intro? I love that. I am Melody Walker. You can find me on the TikTok, in the Instagram at Melody Writes Songs. And I'm on Twitter, but I don't use it that much. And I also, I've got a Substack under Melody Writes Songs too, that I just started. And yeah, you can find our music. My band, is called Front Country, that most of my music's out under, but I'm going to be putting out music under my name this year, starting with Jesus Was a Drag Queen.
Perfect. All right, guys. Well, thanks again, and good luck with everything.
Thanks, Will.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Just a quick reminder to follow me on social media, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. If you haven't already, like and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this. Hit that subscribe button, leave me a rating, and tell a friend. Until next time, everybody, have a good one.